Okay, it's 7:30, so can I welcome you to this third session of the open floor hearing concerning the application for development consent for an underground gas storage facility at Preesall Saltfield, Lancashire. My name's Paul Hudson. I'm an examining inspector in the Planning Inspectorate, and I'm the lead member of the panel of examiners who have been appointed to examine this application. On my left is Libby Gorth, and on my right, Emrys Parry. Also inspectors in the Planning Inspectorate, and together we constitute the formerly known examining authority. We're now sort of drawing towards the end of the six-month examination of this application. And just to remind you, if you've not attended any of these sessions, a little bit about the process. It's largely a written process, and therefore we've received, over the course of the last 6 months, a substantial amount of written material from the applicant and all of those of you who've been making representations to us. We've held several hearings looking at particular topics as part of the examination, and we visited the site on numerous occasions over the past 6 months. Now, when the examination draws to a conclusion, which is, in fact, a week tomorrow, our task will then be to prepare a report and to recommend to the Secretary of State within a three-month period what we think he should do with the application. And the Secretary of State will then have a further 3 months after that to reach his decision and to publish it. So if my calendar is right, that takes us to sometime towards the end of April next year. So our job is to make a recommendation. It's for the Secretary of State to decide whether or not to confirm the order in the light of the recommendation that we make and the report that we write. Now, the purpose of this hearing is to enable those of you who have registered as interested parties at the beginning of the examination process to present to us directly any particular points that you wish to make about the progress of the application, and particularly in the light of the written material that you've submitted to us. So what we expect you to do is to build upon the material that we already have, and therefore we're familiar with that. And this hearing is as I say, principally for registered interested parties. We are happy, however, to enable other people who wish to speak to us to do so, but really that's after those interested parties have... once it's had their turn and concluded their presentation to us. Now, I stress that this process is not a public inquiry, and this hearing is part of the examination process, and it's not a sort of a public meeting in the sense of a Q&A session or a debate. It is, as I say, for those interested parties to make representations orally directly to us, and therefore we expect people to address us from the table in front of us, and we may ask questions as we go along. To that extent, as I say, we already have the written material, so we expect the presentations to be brief, not simply restating material that we already have. And if during the course of the hearing you want to make a point but someone else has already made it, then you really don't need to repeat it, but just add your weight to the point that's already been made. So it doesn't sort of gather in prominence if you just keep on repeating material which is already with us and points which have already been made. There are representatives of the applicant with us here in the hall this evening, and I shall be giving them an opportunity to comment, if they wish to do so, it's entirely up to them, at the end of the hearing. And the end of the hearing is tomorrow night. So they will listen to what people have got to say, and if they want to make any sort of comments to us, they'll have the opportunity to do so at the end. I think those are sort of introductory remarks that I want to make. We've been notified that of the interested parties, Protect Wire Group want to address us this evening. Are there any other interested parties who wish to make an oral contribution to us this evening? Okay. Are you a registered interested party, sir? No, but you haven't registered with the planning inspector at the beginning of the process. No. So there are no other interested parties who wish to make comments. Are there any other people who wish to address us, apart from you, sir? Okay. Okay, right. Thank you. Well, can I ask then, is it Mr. Mulroy who wishes to address us first, or Mr. Clegg? Okay, thank you. Mr. Clegg. Yes, please do. Yes, please do.
Well, good evening, and thank you for the opportunity to raise the points that I wish to make within the objection. By way of introduction, my name is Malcolm Clegg, a resident of Fleetwood for over 70 years. I hold a university qualification in health and safety management, and for 14 years I was the fire safety manager of a top-tier major hazard site with responsibility for fire management and emergency planning. After leaving industry, I became a visiting lecturer at Loughborough University and the National Fire Service College, sharing my experience in fire management and emergency planning. I've now had the opportunity to read the responses to objections included within the Halide IPR note of July 2012. I'm not qualified to offer a geological opinion, nor that of the need for additional capacity of gas storage for the nation, but I am qualified to provide an opinion concerning what I consider to be a grossly inadequate inclusion of safety and security resource within the application. I've tried to rationalise why best advice offered to the company over the years has consistently been watered down. Could it be inexperience in the field of top-tier major hazard site management? This is a first experience for many of the Halide management team into the field of salt cavern gas storage. The Halide webpage provides a brief synopsis of the individual team members' qualifications, and these are impressive, particularly in the engineering disciplines, mechanical, electrical, construction and mining engineering. However, there are also significant gaps in the collective management experience. I can find no affiliation with the Institution of Fire Engineers. No one with a quoted professional health and safety qualification. No one reported to have any top-tier major hazard site experience. And thus, no one with experience in the preparation of a top-tier major hazard site, and with it, the experience of providing the best standard resource facilities. Specifically, I'd like to begin by commenting upon para 3.145 of the Halide July IPR note, where they suggest that Protect Wire Group and others, in preparing lists of gas explosion incidents worldwide, imply that gas storage is fundamentally unsafe. This is not a true statement. I've had much experience across a number of coma sites and of varying hazard source, including chemical, petroleum refining and nuclear industry. I know full well that safe operation at top-tier coma sites can be achieved, but it can only be provided where that site operator is both experienced and committed to the very highest standards. In examining published lists of major accidents worldwide, it is a fact that so often the cause can be traced to the removal of a layer of safety provision. All previous Canatax halide applications have included only relatively low separation distance between wellhead and public footpaths. It's horrendous to see at this late stage that Halide have now made a decision to extend the scheme just north of the waste treatment plant by including a wellhead that will reduce what was already a poor standard and provide even lower protection of the public. The new application sees the wireway threaded between wellheads with a dangerously low separation between them and members of the public. It will also have a significant effect on the visual impact on that portion of the wireway. This site, just north of the waste treatment plant, ensures that walkers, children, employees of the United Utilities, employees of the Notting Golf Club, can be in positions just yards away from a major hazard source. A copse of trees, which stretches to around 600 square yards in size, is directly alongside this new position. And I am reminded of the words of Hyder Consulting, describing that heat from a wellhead jet flame would incinerate anything within 100 yards. And thus rape of the countryside becomes a potential consequence of this inadequate separation. Halite has produced a lower cost plan for the site by making inappropriate savings on safety provisions. The Titanic designers fell into the same trap. Fire management at top-tier major hazard sites with high fire loading include the need to provide adequate water supplies for firefighting or cooling. Halite have provided only a very low standard facility by including a water tank. They have not included a fire water pumping facility within their application at what is a massively high fire load major hazard location. Thus, the ability to provide an immediate cooling facility around wellheads able to protect individuals, both their own employees and members of the public, is ignored. Halite respond by saying that a person would be able to evacuate the area faster than a fire curtain could be initiated. Well, try saying that to a young mother shepherding her young children and enjoying a summer stroll along the Wyoway. And the reality is that a detection system can operate a pressurised water distribution system in seconds. The original statement by Hyder Consulting, who were commissioned in the period when the applicant used the company name as Canatex, was that radiated heat from an ignited wellhead gas escape would be hazardous to humans at up to 250 metres and cause spontaneous ignition at up to 100 metres. Halite now reports some redesign of pipework diameters made subsequent to that initial Hyder definition, but make no effort to supply a suggested modified separation distance to ensure safety to members of the public rightfully using the Wyoway. There is still no reference as to how, within a formal emergency plan, persons walking the Wyoway could possibly be accounted for in the event of an emergency. The only reference appears to be a comment that details of safety systems will be submitted to the competent authority under the COMA regulations. But since the operator cannot be aware of numbers of members of the public crossing the site, they cannot provide this information and cannot satisfy a basic requirement of an HSE emergency plan required for all COMA sites. These deficiencies are significant. And if approved in its present form, this proposal would represent the lowest standard of fire management and site security of any one of 12 top-tier major hazard sites that I worked upon during my career. I'd strongly advise that the applicant be refused in its present form as being totally inadequate in terms of safety and security. And why is there a real fear that the HSE might become incapable of ensuring public safety by providing an adequate inspection regime? The answer lies within massive government budget cuts, a further £34 million in cuts over the next 3 years, on top of the squeezing that has seen the number of HSE inspectors drop by 18% between 2003 and 2009. And with the local HSE presence at Preston long since closed down, the call is for more self-regulation. Within this sorry package, we see Halite, devoid of health and safety professionalism, and actively modifying their scheme by reducing safety protection to the public. Halite attempt to provide a reinsurance quote that risk to persons as a consequence of an accident at their proposed installation is less likely than that of being struck by lightning. Well, interestingly, the US Department of Energy provides its own quote that in recent years, between 100 and 300 people are killed and 1,500 injured each year by lightning, and that worldwide lightning strikes the ground 100 times per second. And I would suggest that the Halite reassurance quote appears pretty meaningless. In summarising my brief presentation, I draw attention to what is the best advice concerning provision of emergency rescue resource at any one of the top-tier major hazard sites. With blank page, the operator would be asked to imagine that the very worst and possibly the most unlikely event had already occurred, and then be asked to list the facilities he would need to have included within his site design in order to contain the emergency and provide best protection to employees and members of the public alike. The Halite application does not pass the test. In comparing the offered provisions with those of a dozen other top-tier major hazard sites that I've worked on, the Halite provisions are at the very bottom of any comparison. The local communities are entitled to expect best possible standard and not the very lowest. And finally, by introducing this new wellhead position with its reduced separation distance, Halite have raised the risk threshold above that included in any of the previous applications, all of which were refused. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clegg. Can I just sort of draw a distinction between the design requirements for the application and its operation and the role of the HSE?
Yes.
I'll come back to that.
Yes.
Can you just recap on what you think are the deficiencies in the design that the application currently contains?
Yes, I've got a number of concerns. In order that the local community can expect a reasonable emergency plan should the worst-case scenario occur, then the highest standards of plan within the site design is necessary. What I see within the plant design is that there is no suitable secondary access to the site to allow emergency response vehicles to come along. I see that there's no provision for the monitoring of people within the site area, which is an absolute necessity of an emergency plan. And I see there is no adequate fire cooling facility to protect individuals in the area from radiated heat. Halite have gone, in my view, for a very low quality, low standard provision.
And is that, if I can characterise it, the wellheads or the gas compressor compound or all of them?
It's essentially the wellheads that I have my major concerns about.
So the people monitoring bit of it, if I can put it that way, is really confined to the wellheads.
Well, that's the major concern,
yes,
because members of the public are now within yards of that boundary of the redesigned wellhead positions. And particularly, yes. Especially, the one that's just starting to appear now, just north of the waste treatment plant.
Yeah.
That one enables the members of the public to thread its way between wellheads.
Yeah. Okay. And in relation to the preparation of the safety plan and the application of the COMA regulations, I mean, your anxiety is not about the regulations and the efficacy of the controls in place. It's an anxiety that the HSE is ill-resourced and won't be able to properly monitor the operation of the site. Is that it?
Yes, partly that as well. I also point out that in the event that the Health and Safety Executive require the improvements to the safety provisions, those safety provisions will appear after the site has been inspected for its environmental problems, difficulties. All the provisions should be there before the environmental studies are carried out. To carry out an environmental study that shows that the land is reasonably open and there's no impairment of visual niceties and so on, and then subsequently to be putting fences and fire installations and pumping and pipes and so on after the environmental study has been carried out would be all wrong. All of that should be in place before the environmental studies.
Okay.
Can I just clarify? The actual...
The safety plan that would be... pre-construction safety plan that would go to HSE for approval under COMA, would you not have expected the... or would you expect the fire safety equipment and the fire cooling equipment to be part of that safety plan?
Well, in an ideal world, I would have expected Halite to accept the responsibility to protect the public. And I would have expected Halite, without any pushing by anybody else, to put in a reasonable fire cooling facility when they're going to be allowing people to be walking in that same area. I would have expected all that to come before coma requirement that clicks in. The coma requirement doesn't click in until later, as you well know, obviously.
Yes. But would you not expect HSE to make that a requirement on the pre-construction, on the safety and the design? Because they're the ones that review the safety of the design itself.
In an ideal world, I would expect the HSE to be doing much more than they're doing now. I would have expected the HSE to have jumped in, even at this stage, to be giving us advice regarding separation distance. But HSE have kept themselves right out of this. I made the point in my presentation that the HSE is so heavily overstretched that, in my eyes, they're not giving the advice now. They're hanging back, probably in the hope that they may not have to get involved.
In your experience of the sites you've worked on, have they included gas storage facilities?
I've gone across the whole gamut. I've worked on sites where nuclear power presentation and chemicals. I've been on refineries, chemicals. I've been on a whole range of coma sites. Every single coma site, without exception, will never allow members of the public to walk on that site they won't allow them on. No. Any individual that goes on any top-tier major had site is initially met at a security reception area. They are instructed and tagged and given the protective equipment that's necessary, and so on and so forth. The thought of unprotected members of the public, and especially young children, on walking around on a top-tier major had site, to me, is horrendous.
Okay, thank you very much indeed, Mr. Craig. Thank you. I think the next person on my list is Mr. Phillips. Is that correct?
Good evening.
Good evening.
Could I say, first of all, that we are providing hard copy of what we're saying so that you can mull over it afterwards. My name's Howard Phillips. I want to talk about the geology of the Preesall salt field. I'm vice chair of Protect Wire Group, and I have been responsible for bringing together the Protect Wire Group evidence and responses on the geology to this and the previous three applications from Canatax Halite. Whilst understanding that this is not a public inquiry, could I say there is a certain amount of frustration at the process of examination, because we've not been allowed to directly question those given evidence on behalf of Halite. We've submitted a great deal of written evidence, as you no doubt know, in response to Halite's justification for its proposals, and Halite has in due course replied, but only to some of the questions asked. Indeed, Halite stresses that it does not intend to provide an in-depth assessment of the PWG evidence. The process has been of necessity protracted, and now the time has run out. But also regarding our own evidence, questions from the examining authority have been directed largely at Halite, not at PWG. And we, in due course, we've given our view in writing on the two rounds of questions from yourselves. However, with no questions asked of us, we've no way of knowing whether the inspectors have grasped fully what we've been saying. There must be areas of concern, perhaps, where we've not explained ourselves sufficiently clearly. So we would have liked the opportunity to be questioned, and we perhaps have a chance tonight. My major concern with this and the previous proposals is that the geological information as represented by the 3D model is insufficient to justify approval. There are other issues concerning the geology, such as the distance apart of the proposed caverns, the possibility of wet rockhead, crown hole subsidence, seismic activity, and the juxtaposition of fracking for shale gas, all of which we have identified and are documented in our evidence. But I want to focus on the 3D geological model. Now, the first set of questions from yourselves to Halite asks specifically about the accuracy of that 3D model compared with the BGS model of 2005. In reply, Halite states, and I quote, "The latest plots are purely to aid visual assessment, and no increase in accuracy is implied." The inspector at the public inquiry concluded in his report that, and I quote, "Overall, the information provided by the appellant is neither sufficient nor sufficiently detailed to support the proposals." The Secretary of State agreed with this conclusion. With no increase in accuracy in the 2010 model presented in this application, we suggest that the conclusion must be the same. I want to turn now to some details in the 3D geological model. Briefly, I would like to summarise the five areas of contention between Halite and Protect Wire Group. And these areas have been set out in some detail, but in various documents, piece by piece. I want to bring them together. Firstly, there exists a major fault which runs north-south across the western end of the Heads Peninsula. We contend that this fault must extend northwards under Barnaby Sands, which would rule out the construction of any caverns in the southern polygon. The fault is not shown on the 3D model, and Halite has chosen not to comment on this issue. The second point of contention is the Burrows Marsh borehole, which actually is at Barnaby Sands and nowhere near Burrows Marsh. The data from the borehole conflict with the BGS model and all the data from adjacent brine wells. An important north-south fault runs along the edge of Barnaby Sands, which is on the 3D model, and it could be instrumental in explaining the differences. Halite was asked by Protect Wire Group to produce a diagram of the fault and its effect on the halite bed. The diagram produced conflicted with the Halite 3D model. It was incorrect, an issue which was taken up by yourselves in the second round of questions. The Halite response to this was to produce the section from the BGS report on the Burrows Marsh borehole, not to do what was required, and this doesn't show the fault. Halite offers this explanation for its incorrect diagram. I quote, "It was intended to assist Protect Wire Group with the interpretation of the plan position of the Burrows Marsh borehole with respect to the East Barnaby Sands fault and the deviated borehole trajectory. The sketch was simplified and did not correctly show the inclination of the salt to the west of the Barnaby Sands fault." Well, thank you, Halite. If that's assistance, we don't need it. Halite has failed to produce an accurate section across the fault, showing its effect on the halite bed. Indeed, in producing an inaccurate sketch, we suggest that Halite has misled Protect Wire Group, and by default, they've misled the examination. Thirdly, there's the possible east-west fracture zone. Protect Wire Group claim there could be a fracture zone running east-west under Barnaby Sands across the centre of the southern polygon. Halite dismisses this, explaining that, and I quote, "The primary evidence for the faulting shown on the model is seismic lines GC81336 to the south and IELP9925 to the north." Just for clarification, both these lines run east-west, GC81 across the centre of the southern polygon, IELP to the north through Arm Hill. In response to the EA's second round of questioning, Halite admits that the line GC81336 is of poor quality, difficult to interpret, and is not incorporated into the geological model. It's fascinating to read Halite's response, actually, to your question on that. So how is Halite able to justify the use of GC81 as primary evidence for faulting in this area? It's misleading to do so. Furthermore, in response to a question from us about the accuracy of the data for cavern 17, which is located at the centre of the southern polygon, Halite states that the overall geological structure is fairly well defined at the cavern because the location is intersected by seismic line GC81336. The poor quality of GC81336 reinforces the conclusion of the geological assessor at the public inquiry, where she called for at least two more seismic lines across this area. The fourth area of contention, the evidence is in the northern polygon now, caverns 8, 10 and 11, which are to the east near Coatwalls Farm. The evidence from the 3D model and the Coatwalls Farm borehole indicate the salt bed lies at a shallower depth than the figures used by Halite in its calculations of gas pressures. These caverns are already the smallest of the 19 caverns proposed. With lower gas pressures, less gas can be stored. And my fifth and final point on this, the northern polygon, caverns 1 to 6, borehole E1. This area was never considered in any of the previous applications as being suitable for gas storage. Yet, without any seismic investigation or boreholes, Halite proposes to construct 6 caverns there. The caverns will range from 120 to 220 metres in height. The nearest borehole, E1, shows the salt to be 81 metres thick, which calls into question the feasibility of creating those 6 caverns. Halite was asked by yourselves in its second round of questions about E1. Its response is to dismiss the evidence from E1 and replace it with an interpretation of salt thickness and the location of the Bernese fault. So when the evidence does not suit, Halite chooses to ignore it and replace it with an interpretation that does. Given the very limited thickness of the Halite bed, the height of the caverns would need to be reduced to between 30 and 50 metres, depending on the cavern radius. Such caverns are not only unviable, but potentially unsafe. It would have been relatively simple to carry out a seismic survey from east to west through E1. Why was that not done? We believe that it's absolutely essential at this stage to have a full understanding of the geology of the Preissel Graben. The most important unknown is the location of the Bernese fault, which forms the boundary of the salt field to the west. The responses from Halite to these issues raised by Protect Wire Group concerning the geology need to be carefully looked at. Firstly, Halite say, I quote, "The amount of data available to the project in the form of borehole data, data from existing caverns and seismic data is far in excess of similar projects, most similar projects." Halite is proposing to store 900 million cubic metres of gas. That will be the largest terrestrially based underground gas storage project in the United Kingdom, in an area where the geology is complex, the faulting is complex, where the caverns would be the shallowest in Europe and potentially the most unsafe, adjacent to an old brine field where many of the brine wells and mine are in a state of collapse, and where 80,000 people live within a 3-mile radius. It's little wonder, then, that the geology of this area must be established with the greatest degree of accuracy so that nothing is left to chance. The second response is that once consent for development is given, Halite will carry out more seismic surveys and possibly drill more bores in order to refine their geological model. At the issue-specific hearing with the EA on the 19th of September, Halite stated that only in some areas is the geology sufficiently well understood to be able to go ahead with the design and approval of the caverns. Halite did not state which areas these were or how many caverns were involved. It did not reveal how many additional seismic lines would be needed or where they would be located. Worryingly, Halite proposes to go ahead with the construction of the infrastructure before or at the same time as the additional seismic surveys, not knowing whether the project can be successfully completed. These additional seismic lines should have been carried out before the submission of this, the fourth application for underground gas storage in the Preesall Salt. And then thirdly, Halite asserts that the technical assessor's comments at the 2005-06 public inquiry were in relation to a larger and less well-defined scheme, and therefore presumably should be discounted. PWG has shown that the Canatex proposal considered at the inquiry was for 20 caverns to store a total of 577 million cubic metres of gas, compared with 19 caverns and 900 million cubic metres of gas being proposed by Halite. That's not a smaller scheme. It is also wrong to suggest that the present proposal is spread over a smaller area. What has happened is that Halite has moved the area where it proposes to construct caverns further to the north and under the Knot End Golf Course, an area where data are lacking. So let me summarise what I've been saying. An extension of the Western Heads Fault under Barnaby Sands would prohibit the construction of caverns in the southern polygon. The limited thickness of salt adjacent to E1 would rule out caverns 1 to 6. That would leave just 5 caverns, 7 to 11. Confined to a very limited area with an estimated total of gas which could be stored of 153 million cubic metres. This would have a very different impact, even if were considered to be an economically viable development in this much reduced form. One of the conclusions reached by the geology assessor following the public inquiry was that, and I'm quoting, "The current level of uncertainty inherent in the geological model is such that the range of possible outcomes in terms of cavern locations and capacities is so wide that the impact of the scheme in planning terms cannot be established." That level of uncertainty remains. Therefore, we suggest that the conclusion reached must be the same and the proposal should be rejected. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. I think it's fair to say we're pretty familiar with the views you've expressed because they are well contained in the detailed submissions that we've received. Can I just be clear about one point? I mean, you've articulated an objection to this particular application, but do I take it that this is not an in-principle objection to the creation of salt caverns in the pre-salt salt field? It's your confidence in the data available to support the actual, well, element of construction proposed. From what you were saying about some elements being better supported than others, I take it this is not a root and branch objection to the principle of creation of salt caverns in this location. It's the number which are supported by the availability of reliable geological data, in your view?
I said at the beginning there were other concerns about the geology, which I've not gone into in great detail tonight. So there are still great concerns, but I was concentrating on this one issue, that the geological model is insufficient at this stage to justify that number of caverns and that amount of gas storage.
But some of it, you thought, was justified, if I understand it correctly, because you analysed the number of caverns in the northern and southern polygons.
Indeed.
And a group in the middle seemed to be, in your view, reasonably well supported.
I think I did pick out 5.
Yes.
That it would be possible, as far as I can see, from looking carefully at the model, with very little questions being asked, that could contain gas, yes.
Yeah,
so which was 150 million cubic metres, which is quite a small amount.
So to extend that to the rest of the application, I mean, is a question, really, of the reliability of the geological data. So if that level of confidence were available across the whole of the salt field, you'd be supporting... Or not objecting to, or not supporting.
I wouldn't be,
you'd be sustaining an objection to an increased number.
I wouldn't be objecting on these grounds.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. That's helpful.
Yep. Can I just ask a question? When you had the five areas, it's the first area. You talked about a fault under Barnaby Sands that was not in the 3D model.
Indeed.
Where is that evidence?
It is clearly shown on the 3D map as running across that north-south across the Western Heads Peninsula. It is put in there because when Canatex drilled the Hay Nook borehole, they found discrepancies with the BW-130 borehole, which is in the same field. There's something like 140 metres difference in the base of the salt. And in order to explain that, there has to be a north-south fault running between them. Now, with that amount of difference in the base of the salt between those two boreholes, the only conclusion you can reach is that must extend northwards under Barnaby Sands.
So it's from the Hay Nook borehole and the BW-130?
Yes.
And it extends north under Barnaby Sands and south. I just haven't got it in my head at the moment.
I've
pored over that map for many hours.
The fault is clearly shown as being under the heads. What is not shown is that it extends northwards under the estuary.
So it is shown on the plan, but it isn't shown as extending. Is that correct?
Thank you. Can I just take you back to the Bernays fault?
Mm-hmm.
Your written material lays enormous stress on needing to be absolutely sure of the position of the Bernays fault. My understanding is that the applicant has recognised there's some uncertainty about the position of the fault, but applying the cavern sort of location criteria has adopted the most pessimistic view as to where that fault might be, i.e. its sort of easterly extent. So in that situation, why is Protect Wire Group so concerned that unless the position of the Bernays fault is known with absolute precision, then no further conclusions can be drawn about the potential for cavern construction?
Well, I think it's the assumption that the Bernays fault runs through E1 or is picked up in E1, which we seriously doubt. I mean, we've looked at things like the number of marl layers and the rock that is entered under the salt, and also various other boreholes to the east of E1. And we believe that E1, therefore, that 81 metres, is the full thickness of the halite in that area. Now, therefore, if that is the case, halite say, well, it isn't, because the Bernays fault runs through there, and therefore we have a thickness of salt immediately to the east of that fault line of something like 200, 250 metres thick. And we're saying, well, you, if it's 80 metres, you can't possibly put salt caverns 1 to 6 in there. You need to find out whether that is the Bernays fault or not.
But that's about the dimensions of cavern construction, not their ability to actually construct them. I mean, if the fault is being avoided by adopting quite generous spacing criteria, then that avoids the fault. The issue you're drawing attention to is the thickness of the salt member.
Indeed. Yes. Yes.
That's
quite
that's
right.
Really the point.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I think in one of your papers, you actually talk about it whether the fault it went through is actually the Bernays fault or one of the parallel minor faults that may run alongside it. Does that have any implications in the assessment of the 81 metres versus 220?
I just don't know on that one. I think we need to find out a lot more about what happens to the edge of the graben in that area of E1. I don't know whether we've got one single fault which is further out under the Wyre estuary. in which case, obviously, safety of those caverns is not an issue because it's further away from the caverns, or whether you've got a series of step faults. It could be a step fault, and E1 represents that fault. But again, looking, as I said, at the mile bands, the number of mile bands, the report in the BGS memoir in 1990 by Wilson and Evans as to the rock that's underneath, and the fact that you've got a salt layer in the rock underneath leads me to think that this must be the full extent of the halite, 81 metres in E1. And you can't disguise it by saying, oh, no, it's not that. It's really 200 metres thick because it cuts through the Bernays Fault at that point.
Yep. Okay.
Yes, I mean, you start off saying about the model. What you're saying effectively is there should be much more work done, particularly on the geology and the faults, to enable a reasoned assessment to be made. That's the gist of it, isn't it?
That is the gist of it, yes. Yeah. It wouldn't take away our objections on other grounds.
No,
the grounds
that
Mr. Clegg, for example, has given you.
Yeah.
But it would take away my objections on this specific grounds that we do not know enough in order to have a clear idea of what the development will actually mean when it gets going.
Yeah. Cool.
Any others? Okay, I think that's clear. Thank you very much, Clegg. Right. Mr. Mulroy.
Thank you, sir. Coming third, there's bound to be a little bit of repetition, and we've tried to keep it as brief as possible and as relevant to the points we wish to make. My name's Ian Mulroy. I'm the chair of the Protect Wire Group. This is the fourth planning application that the Protect Wire Group has opposed for the same scheme from the same company over the past 10 years. With each iteration, the details of the schemes have been modified and the company latterly changed its name, but to all intents and purposes, it's the same scheme. A scheme that's already been turned down three times, the second time after a lengthy and protracted public inquiry. The Protect Wire Group argues and continues to argue that the proposed scheme remains substantially flawed. Our arguments have remained constant over the past 10 years and are focused on the lack of provision of health and safety aspects, the scheme's potential impact on residents and properties, primarily those living and working within 3 miles of it, and the fact that the geology has not been proven to be suitable for a development of this scale and nature. PWG contends, as you've heard and read about in submissions from Howard Phillips, that Halite's investigations are incomplete. And while Preezall's geology may well be unique and one of the only places in the UK where underground gas storage in salt is possible, it is perhaps the only place because it's the last place. And this is probably because of its perceived unsuitability for gas storage. ICI tested the salt field for storage, but decided not to develop it. NPL subsequently owned the salt field, and they sold it to Canatax and Halite. But then NPL went on to develop gas storage in Cheshire. One has to ask why both ICI and NPL chose not to develop the Preezall site. It's a marginal site because of its shallowness, the shallowest salt beds in Europe, if not in the world, and we think it's unsuitable because we have layered salt here as opposed to the homogeneous dome salt widely used for gas storage around the world. Add to this its location between two major faults, with an area in between crisscrossed by numerous other faults, cracks, fissures, and the adjacency of the 130-plus old brine wells and the collapsed mine. If that wasn't enough, we also contend that another major factor in making the site unsuitable for gas storage is that there are about 80,000 people living within 3 miles of it. Gas has a proven ability to travel more than 7 miles underground before surfacing. Thus, the risk to residents within 3 miles and their concerns should an incident occur is not an exaggeration. You have read and heard evidence from Malcolm Clegg on behalf of Protect Wire about the woeful inadequacy and the emission of safety exclusion zones and the proposed operation of what would become a top-tier major hazard site. And I have also written to you this week on that matter. I ask the panel to consider why Halite Energy is deferring making decisions on exclusion zones around its site until after the DCO is granted. We suspect that it would be detrimental to their safety case if these zones were established now. Notwithstanding the poor geology and safety implications, the group also asserts that the human rights of tens of thousands of Wye residents and workers will be infringed if this application for a DCO is recommended and subsequently granted. In the interested parties session at the public inquiry, we heard testimony from a Mrs. Valerie Green, who spoke using her 35 years of experience as a claims inspector and risk manager for a major insurance company. And she told the inquiry that this type of development would cause insurance companies problems when assessing the risks involved with house insurance. Where there is evidence of previous problems, which there have been at other numerous UGS sites around the world, residents can expect to have their insurance premiums loaded, making insurance very expensive, and as a worst case, the companies could refuse to insure homes in the area. This is demonstrable with the current practice of insuring homes sited on or at risk from floodplains. Add the possibility of property devaluation as an option to this, and the residents have every right to be concerned. Mrs. Green expressed concerns that many of her letters to the Health and Safety Executive had gone unanswered, and she suggested that a lack of response showed the answers and the full extent of the problems for both now and in the future were unknown. She went on to tell the inquiry that if the full extent of the risk is unknown, then this must breach every aspect of European health and safety regulation, and therefore planning permission should be denied. Now, I'm sure the panel are well versed in European law, but I would like to add for the record that PWG understands that the Seveso II Directive, as enacted in law in the UK into the COMA Regulations 1999, aims to prevent major accidents which involve dangerous substances and to limit their consequence for man and the environment. We also contend that environmental harm attributed to state action or inaction that has significant injurious effect on a person or their private and family life constitutes a breach of Article 8, Section 1. The ultimate decision made by the Secretary of State in this matter will surely be regarded as a state action. There is one clause in the Seveso II agreement entitled Prohibition of Operations, and this states, member states must prohibit the use or bringing into use of any establishment, installation or storage facility where the measures taken by the operator for the prevention of accidents are inadequate. I suggest the evidence offered by Protect Wye Group and the lack of evidence offered by Halite in this particular matter should define the scheme as a definite candidate under the prohibition of operations, and therefore the scheme should be prevented from being brought into use. Similarly, another consideration is the Health and Safety at Work Act, which requires employers to conduct their undertaking so as to ensure that persons, employed or not, are not exposed to risks to their health and safety. The third main issue, and one which features in European legislation, is that, is there an alternative, and has this alternative been considered? The answer is yes, there is an alternative. There are plenty of alternatives. PWG's evidence has already demonstrated that there are numerous approved gas storage schemes around the country, plus others waiting for approval, all of which are in more suitable salt strata than this one. None of them are located in between two major faults, like this one. None of them are adjacent to significant centres of population, again, like this one. So has this alternative been considered? Yes, it's been considered by the Protect Wye Group, but dismissed by Halite, probably because it doesn't address the interests of their shareholders and their company balance sheet. Protect Wye Group feels it has successfully challenged Halite's claim that there is an identified national interest need for this specific gas storage facility in this specific location to ensure security of supply. there are currently in excess of 11 billion cubic metres of gas storage waiting to go. Planning approval has been given. There's another 7-plus billion cubic metres awaiting planning consent, which will more than meet the country's security of supply needs. Now, whilst it hasn't featured as a major component of the examination, we'd ask the panel to consider the logistics of moving Halite's proposed gas to market. Transco has publicly stated that if all of the proposed schemes came to fruition, there would be a surplus of gas, and there would be an inability to move such quantities around the country using the existing infrastructure. Until the necessary investment is made in the NTS, it would seem counterproductive to impose further restrictions and load upon it with this marginal and unnecessary scheme. Returning to geological matters, I would ask the panel to look at the geological selections made by Halite and Canatax over the past 10 years for the siting of their proposed caverns. Examinations of their three previous planning applications have resulted in refusals, with the distinct lack of geological information being cited as a major factor. The inspector and assessor at the public inquiry documented clear indications of what was missing and of what could be done to achieve a successful outcome in any future application. Halite hasn't undertaken the necessary testing and surveying to accomplish this. Indeed, they have worsened the situation by moving their scheme into areas of unknown and untested geology, and publicly stated to this examination that they still have seismic work to undertake to fully understand some of the site's geology. This company has been around here for almost 20 years and actively pursued planning permission for the last 10 of them. We have to ask why they still have seismic work to do and to ask why they have submitted yet another incomplete application for planning permission. Staying with the subject of unknown and untested geology, the Protect Wire Group and residents alike still have major concerns over the potential for accidental and uncontrolled migrating gas to enter the geological strata below the Fleetwood Peninsula. The volume and nature of the objections of the public collated by PWG and submitted to the panel demonstrates this case. The United Utilities infrastructure could be the involuntary receptor and subsequent conduit, allowing any escaped gas to spread across the peninsula and down to the centre of Blackpool and the Fylde coast, with potentially devastating and explosive effect. United Utilities did raise concerns, which have seemingly been talked away without any physical geological examinations being undertaken. PWG asks the inspectorate to look closely at what geological evidence has been offered to UU to allow them to change their position from one of concern to one of no objection. But to date, we see no evidence of questions being asked of Halite, nor of any plans to investigate the geology, and this remains a major concern to us. Fracking appears to have the support of government at the moment, and if allowed to resume, we can probably look forward to more earth tremors across the area. The ultimate proximity of the nearest fracking site to the Preezall salt field remains a bit like the HSE exclusion zones, namely, yet to be decided. So who can say that if the proximity of the fracking boundary legitimately and legally moves towards Preezall, then in doing so, it will increase the risk to the integrity of the proposed caverns and the associated pipework and to existing and proposed infrastructure. So where does that leave us? The need is not proven. The geology, suitability of the site is not proven. Questions remain. Public safety, safe operations not proven, and no comprehensive emergency plans are in place. And European law, the application doesn't meet the criteria set out in the legislation, in our opinion. It leaves me now, sir, to ask you to judge this ill-conceived and ill-prepared application as an unnecessary risk to too many people, and to recommend its rejection to the Secretary of State in the strongest possible terms. And hopefully we'll see it once and for all time consigned to the history books. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mulroy. Could I just take you back to PWG's sort of initial representation, your relevant representation? I mean, this is back in the spring, so I've you may remember it. But you listed a very large number of issues upon which PWG would be making sort of further representations. And I mean, it's entirely up to you, of course, what you then chose to concentrate on. But I don't recall there being any sort of subsequent discussion or representations by PWG, I mean, concerning the impact on the SSSI, the SPA, and in one sense the protected areas, which I thought was something of great concern to PWG, but I don't think it's featured in your representation since. I mean, it's just a question, really, as to whether that's a matter where you're almost satisfied with the evidence which has been provided, particularly by the nature conservation bodies.
No, sir, we're not satisfied at all. We are, as you will understand, just a group of residents. We've come together to try and find our areas of expertise. And the gentleman that was handling that area for us sadly died.
Right.
His widow didn't turn any of the documentation over to us, and so we were just high and dry without the notes and all his work, and we couldn't pick it up and follow it. So we just had to let that one go and hope that the other agencies will champion that cause.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Oh, that's clear. Yeah. Any...
Just to say, so one of the things you also said was noise. And again, that didn't crop up in the detail.
We don't have the facilities or the resource to... we are concerned about the noise, but we haven't got the technical expertise or experts on board to produce a case against it. Last time, I think it was Lancashire County or Wye Borough that championed the noise aspect of it. So we, as a group of residents, don't have that area of expertise.
OK, thank you.
It is going to be noisy, and we will object to it, but... we can't present a case to you at this point in time.
No. Okay, thank you very much indeed. Okay. I think the next offer I had was the gentleman in front of me, so...
My name is Jeff Draper, and I'm a director...
Draper.
And I am a director of Wire Energy Limited, a local renewable energy company. I'm also a chartered accountant, and I have an honours degree in maths and physics, so I feel I can see both points of view from the finance and the science point of view. The purpose of this presentation is to make you aware of two things. Firstly, that there is a much more viable alternative for the use of these salt caverns than you may be aware, and certainly much more valuable than storing fossil fuels. Secondly, I want to make you aware that the alternative that we propose is incompatible with Halite's proposals for a number of reasons, but mainly because if Halite are given planning permission to develop the salt caverns, I believe they would flip the project for a large capital gain. Any new owner would not let any other developer anywhere near the salt caverns or the surrounding area. So we wouldn't have a chance of doing either of the things that we're proposing to do. Okay, what's our project about? What Wire Energy is planning to do is build a tidal barrage across the River Wire, together with an underground energy storage facility. The electricity generated will be sold at peak times onto the national grid, where there is currently a shortage of peak electricity. As the project generates renewable energy, a significant additional income will be received through carbon credits and ROCs. This is proven technology. It can be put in operation within a relatively short period of time, within 5 years, and can therefore go a long way to helping the UK achieve its renewables obligations by 2020. as well as solving the UK's electricity storage problems. There is a huge amount of local support in the area for this project to go ahead, unlike Halite, as well as political support across all parties. I have here some of the 800 letters of support from local residents in the Wyre area. As far as the first part of what we're proposing to do is concerned, it's the tidal barrage, and I'll just explain that to you first.
Well, I'm not sure we're here to consider alternative proposals. We're only entitled to look at the application in front of us. Okay. What I'd like to know from you is actually the status of your proposal. You don't need to describe it, but okay. there's an application in process. I mean, is a proposal formally in front of any body which is being asked to take a decision on it?
There will be, yes.
But there isn't at the moment.
The point I'm making is that if this is given permission by the Secretary of State, we won't have a chance anyway.
But we can only consider proposals in front of us. Yours isn't, and therefore I don't think we have any status to consider alternative schemes which have not yet been actually put into the planning system. It's interesting what you say, but it can't have a bearing on our decision.
I will only be 5 minutes, if that's okay, because I think you haven't heard any of this before, and it is important.
But we can't do anything about it. This is the point I'm making to you. So, I mean, by all means, tell us the advantages of it, but we can't take it into account if it's not a proposal which is on the table, so to speak.
Well, as far as the salt caverns are concerned, I can explain about the tidal barrage, but basically The main reason, as far as the salt caverns are concerned, and I'll cut to the chase as far as that's concerned, is energy storage. Now, this is where it's more interesting compared with what Halite is proposing. They're proposing to store dangerous gas. We're proposing to store inert air. And energy storage is a problem right around the world, not just in the UK. Germany, for example, is having huge problems at the moment trying to balance their system because of all the investment that they put into wind farms. So we would propose to use these same salt caverns for energy storage rather than gas storage. And the problem is that there's only 7 sites across the whole of the UK where these salt caverns are viable. 4 of the sites happen to be where tidal barrages could be put in place. You've basically got the Wyre, which would be a great prototype. Then you've got the Mersey, which is 10 times bigger. Then you've got the Severn, which is 10 times bigger again. And you've also got Strangford Lock in Northern Ireland. So we would view what we're trying to do as a prototype for the bigger projects. And the Severn is extremely important. The Wyre is 1/100th of the size of that. But what both the Severn, the Mersey and the Wyre have got in common is potential tidal barrages, but also an energy storage system. And just to explain that the problem that the Severn have got, well, they've got a variety of problems with regard to environmentalists, but one of the problems they've got is that when the tide comes in, there's a huge amount of energy generated, a huge pulse of energy, which is far too much for the national grid to cope with at the moment. And so they need an energy storage system in order to store that. And what we are proposing is that we could start the ball rolling on this over the next few years by proving that the energy storage system works on the Wyre. And then it gives the government the confidence and people in the UK the confidence that the same system could be used across the Mersey and the Severn. So that's really what we're all about. I'm talking off the top of my head here, but at the end of the day, I can give you all this information as well. To give you an idea of what we're looking at on the Wyre here and what the potential is, there is a proven system in Germany at Hundorf, which is a compressed air energy system. What basically happens is air is compressed into the salt caverns. And basically when the energy is required, the air is let out and drives turbines and produces energy, peak energy at night. And Germany, this has been running in Germany for 40 years now, with a complete 100% safety record. And And so what we're looking at is proven energy. What we've got on the wire is a much bigger system here. I mean, obviously, the mathematics is simple. 900 million cubic metres of space is 300 times the 300,000 cubic metres of space that they got in Huntove. So it's a massive thing. And I know that the government has got a huge problem with trying to get a strategic reserve. And at the moment, they've only got the likes of Dunorwick is used at the moment when people put the kettles on Coronation Street and things like that, and a huge pulse of energy needs to be produced. Now, Dunorwick produces 9,000 megawatt hours of electricity. The strategic reserve, and the government admits this, we need a strategic reserve of between 100 and 150 million megawatt hours of electricity. Now, the wire could produce that. It's big enough to do that. The salt caverns are big enough to do that. And it's a huge thing. It's much bigger than just gas storage. It really is. If we could get the salt caverns under the wire to produce a strategic reserve, that solves an awful lot of the UK's energy problems. And this is what I'm trying to get at. You know, this is more than us just building a dam or anything like that. If you let these guys have the planning permission to go ahead, what are you going to do when the Germans, in a couple of years' time, basically say, well, yeah, we've solved all the problems with compressed air, and here's the technology. Are you going to do a compulsory purchase order to get the salt caverns back? It's too late by then. They've got them. And this is the here and now. And, you know, the government has to make a choice just how serious it is with renewable energy. Not only will we solve the UK's energy storage problems, it'll also get us most of the way to the 2020 renewables obligations, because a lot of the compressed air could be compressed using wind farm energy. So, for example, you've got the 104 turbines off Walney Island. Now, at the moment, if the wind blows and it blows in the middle of the night, where's the energy going to go? No one needs it, so it's just wasted. And if the wind doesn't blow during the day or at night, then, you know, people are putting the kettles on, and all of a sudden you have to start up gas-fired power stations and coal-fired power stations to balance the electricity. And it's incredibly inefficient. So what we could do with the salt caverns in the wire is basically balance the system really easily. And the fact that these guys have blown 60 million quid on it, I mean, I hear what Protect Wire group are saying, but, and I'm totally with them, but these, you know, most of these salt caverns will be pretty good. I mean, there's no telling, but some of them will be, and we don't need them all. We certainly don't need to produce any more salt caverns. We can use the existing ICI ones. So there is a really viable alternative, which is much bigger than gas storage, you know?
Okay. Can I then take you on to the second point you raised, which I think was an observation about Halite's intentions to actually develop the project? What did you actually got in mind? What did you want to tell us on that point?
Their intentions, if they got planning permission?
I think you were casting doubt on their intentions to implement that.
I got 2 points. I'd do that if I was them. And secondly, I'm not going to reveal my sources, but I have from a very good source that that's exactly what they'll do. They will deny that. And that's fair enough. It's up to them to do that. But I'd do that.
Okay, yeah. Okay, right. So it's an observation rather than a...
Well, it's an observation, yeah. But I do have it from a high source, but I can't reveal the source.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Draper.
Thank you.
Did anyone else want to make a contribution? Sir?
My name is David Aspenden. I do attend the meeting of the Protect Wire group.
Sorry, what was your surname again?
David Aspenden.
Okay.
I just live in the area, and I've got my concerns. It seems odd that we're in a situation where nearly 11,000 people fill forms in to complain about Canatex Highlight. And the thing is with it is that they say that they're going to put brine into the sea near Rossall, which they say will kill everything in the sea within so many metres. But they don't seem to me to take into account the effect of the tide, which could spread the brine and kill a greater area. And I don't know how that would equate. I'm not technically adept at that. There's a lot of people who are very upset about it. They see it that it's been rejected 3 times. And why are they having to go to fight it for a 4th time? There is a lot of concern about if there is an accident, the provisions for the people in Fleetwood, and if you've heard within a 3-mile area that it could have, how are they going to evacuate up to 80,000 people out of the area altogether? That really is just all I've got to say. And I'm just concerned as well because if it kills the sea for so many distances, it'll kill the fish, kill the plant life, and it could kill bird life and anything that could be where it's got a natural reserve on the Wyre estuary.
Okay.
It's just my point and the way I feel about it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Are you all right?
Thanks. Good. Any other contributions requested? Sorry, would you like to come to the... I'm not encouraging repeat orders, I might add, but...
As I spoke to you this morning at the 9:30 or 10 o'clock session, Mr. Entwistle, I live up on in Little Thornton, and that the gentleman that's just spoke there, it's regarding, you know, all this sort of work which we'll call it Canatex was saying and now Haylite, as regards, you know, getting down, nothing has really been highlighted about the outcome of washing out thousands, literally thousands, hundreds of thousands of tonnes of basically slurry that's actually now going to go out into Morecambe Bay just off of Fleetwood. Blackpool now has just been given...
Yeah, I think you made that point as very
firmly. Yeah, as regards bad...
Yeah, I don't think you need to repeat the point. We got it very firmly from you this morning.
Excellent, thank you very much. Yeah. But that gentleman there is just, you know, I'm just really pleased that that's another extension which hasn't been brought up as well. The complete pollution from Fleetwood to Lytham St Anne's.
Yeah.
I mean, in 2008 we had the river, everything blows in westerly. We even had one of the ferries was actually blown in 2008, 2009, the River Dance. Just shows that everything, all the rubbish, even from Barrow in Furness through, comes back onto this complete coastline.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, well, if there are no other requests to speak, I'll adjourn this particular session. We've been here in the Marine Hall for 3 sessions today. Tomorrow we shift our focus to the other side of the estuary, and we'll be in Stalmine Village Hall for 3 sessions. So can I thank you very much indeed for coming this evening and your contribution.